You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, you know what time it is. It's another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles. And like most Friday episodes, we just goof around, right? Today is a BS session with my man, Dan Matthews from the Nomadic Outdoorsman. And I don't even know how much we actually talk about hunting in this episode. But here's some of the topics that we talk about. We talk about how our wives buy multiple jars of pickles, coffee creamers, and then our refrigerator space is taken up by those types of things instead of like meats and actual meals. We talk about death row meals. Like if you were going to be executed tomorrow, if you had the death penalty and you were going to be executed tomorrow, what would your final wild game meal be? That's a good one. Those are a lot of good questions. I think we start the episode off with that. And then we BS, man. We do talk a little hunting. We talk trail cameras. We talk strategy. We talk buying, buying ground in different states than we live in because they're more affordable and you might be able to stretch your dollar further per acre than you would in, like, for Iowa, man. Recreation ground now, especially in the county that I live, is unapproachable right now for the kind of money that I make. So we have a little fun conversation with that. And you know what? Let me click on this real quick and let me read some of the takeaways. The hosts share their favorite wild game meals and discuss the importance of enjoying the last meal if they were on death row. They talk about their love for sweets and the challenges of managing groceries in their households. This is all AI bullet lists, by the way. Oh, and then we have a conversation about a state like Wisconsin. Now, as we all know, the state of Wisconsin produces the most Boone and Crockett animals every single year, bar none, as far as Pope and Young. And at least I'll say this with an asterisk. They have the most Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young entries every year. That doesn't mean that the most are killed but as far as who calculates that stuff and who collects that data, Wisconsin is number one and has been number one for the longest time. So we talk a little bit about why Wisconsin has this. Like, why is Wisconsin so good even though they have a firearm season during the rut, right? So a lot of people say, well, if we took our firearm season out of the rut, then we'd have bigger bucks. Well, Wisconsin has a rut firearm season and they still have big bucks every single year. So very fun, interesting conversation. And that's what today's episode is about. It's a good old-fashioned, pure BS session that you guys will definitely enjoy. Basically two dudes sitting around a campfire and talking about their lives. Outside of that, we do have to do a commercial. I'm going to make these fast because I got kids downstairs and supper's almost ready. I'm hungry, and I know my wife is already pissed at me because I'm up here and the kids are fighting. So if you're looking for a saddle, go check out Tethered, tetherednation.com. I just got my recent order of Wasp broadheads. I'm going to be messing around with two particular heads this year. These are my favorite, the Boss 4 blade, that's a fixed blade, and then the 3 blade 125 grain jackhammer. How do I put this? That head crushes. The jackhammer crushes deer. Ribs, no problem, destroyed. Heart, tissue, no problem, destroyed. Giant blood trails, destroyed. And you find your deer, even in really shitty shots. So wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20, Vortex Optics. I'm just going to say some of the new stuff that they got. Red dots coming out. They got spotting scopes, new spotting scopes, new tripods coming out. They have a badass apparel line coming out. They have, or already, they have, just adding to it. They have sunglasses that have come out, which are, by the way, badass. They sent me two pairs, and one of them's 25 foot deep in the Coralville Reservoir right now. I'm pretty pissed about that, but vortexoptics.com. Go check them out and all of the products. I do have a discount for you for Vortex, and that would be if you go to eurooptic.com, and if you decide to buy your Vortex optics from there, you can use the discount code 9, the number 9, the word finger, the number 10, 9 finger 10, and that's going to give you 10% discount on all Vortex optics. Feed Hub, if you run feeders and you want to be able to manage your spin cast feeder from your from the Moultrie mobile app, get a Feed Hub, dude. Manages feed levels. You can schedule feedings. You can run an unclog cycle. It basically allows you to be more efficient with all of the feeders that you have, and you can manage them all. So go check out the Feed Hub at MoultrieMobile.com. And then we have Code Blue Sense, Mock Scrape City, baby. Mock Scrape City, baby. And I'm getting tons of reveal trail camera pictures sent my way over the last, you know, since I put those out. And the Mock Scrape is doing it again. Deer are hanging out in that area, and they're coming to investigate it on a daily basis. And I'm sure you guys have seen my Instagram page where I do the cell cam check-in. Go check it out, cell cam check-in on my Instagram page. And it basically every day I tend to post some pictures of all the cell cam pics that I'm getting. So codebluesense.com, they do a variety of other, you know, scents, real and synthetic deer urine, scent elimination products, so forth and so on. Codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20. Huntworth has just launched a brand new camel pattern called the Vertec. Go check it out. This pattern, I can't tell you about it. You're going to have to go see it, but they have added it to all. I think he said 90% of their current lineup is now available in Vertec. And so also, if you want to go to the Hunting Gear podcast from last week and listen to the episode I did with Nate Sellers from Huntworth about the new Vertec pattern, go check it out, because you get filled in quite a bit. So that's Huntworth, huntworthgear.com. Reveal trail cameras. Go to tacticam.com and check out all the bells and whistles on the new 3.0 X and the 3.0 Pro. These cameras are easy to set up. They take very high quality pictures. They send them to you extremely quick. And that's everything that you can ask for in a cell cam. And I'm telling you, they're top notch, and they're on the affordable side for as far as cell cams are concerned. So go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the Reveal 3.0 series. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Let's get into a badass BS session with my man Nate from the Nomadic Outdoorsman. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles. Today it's Double D Day. Double Dan's. We got Dan Matthews with the Nomadic Outdoorsman. And of course me, I only have nine fingers, Dan Johnson. And today it's Friday. I had two dudes. Now don't take this the wrong way. Okay. I had two dudes that bailed on me today. Okay. And so I needed to have a podcast recorded. And so I have a list of people who, like, Jeremy Dinsmore, antler up. He's a school teacher, so he doesn't have a job in the summer times, right? He's doing other things. You don't have a quote unquote real job. And then there's Nick Otto, with the Hunivore. He doesn't. And then there's some other guys that work from home that are pretty flexible. So I gave some of those guys a call, and it was a strikeout. And finally, somebody bit on my lure, and it was you. And
dude, I am happy to be the bench warmer or the rebound or whatever you want to call it, man.
I love it. Okay. Weird stuff today. Weird stuff. You know, I was watching a prison documentary a while ago, and it was about this guy who did like a whole bunch of horrible things. But because my wife loves those types of things, but they were sitting down in part of in this one scene of this documentary, and it was about the last meal that this guy's ever going to eat. Okay. He's getting put to death and he has his last meal and the state pays for it. And there's a whole bunch of different things there. All right. And so we both like wild game. And so I'm thinking we kick this episode off with like a wild game feed or like a wild game last supper type of conversation. And so I'm just going to kick it to you. You're getting put, Dan Matthews is getting put to death tomorrow. What are you eating tonight?
Dude. Oh, dang. So it's tomorrow. All right. Tomorrow. I was thinking this was like, I finished my meal. I don't have to worry about overeating because I'm not going to feel it. Like, I'm just going to get put out right away. So tomorrow, man, I feel like shredded pheasant gravy over rice would be pretty high up there.
Wow. Like, that's a, I didn't expect that.
No, it's something that we don't have a lot. I don't do a ton of pheasant hunting, but every now and then I'll get to go out, and it's one of my wife's favorite meals also, but I love it, man. It's just, it's just creamy white gravy with pheasant shredded in it. And so maybe that would be like a starter. And then I'd want to try, I think I would want to do something that I hadn't done before, like moose tongue or, you know, moose heart. And maybe it's just because I'm getting ready for Alaska, but I feel like that would be just something to go out with a bang. Like, hey, my last meal was a giant chunk of rare moose heart.
Okay. I get that. I get that. Right. But what happens if it sucks and you're like, dude, this last meal, I'm going to go either to hell or to heaven with a bad taste in my mouth.
Dude, that would suck. Yeah.
That would suck. Right. Or let's say you had to live eternity with only the last meal that you could eat. Right. That's like, that's a different version of this conversation. So, okay. So you might be a little bit adventurous. What else would be on the table?
Shredded venison quesadillas.
Okay. I like that where this is going.
That's like a killer meal. I've always enjoyed it. And I mean, we'll do it for breakfast. We'll throw some scrambled eggs mixed in there, but a little bit of corn for a sweet pop while you're eating it. And then you've got like the salty, savory taste of the shredded venison. Yeah. And then I'm just like a normal flour, white tortilla covered in butter and pan fried, you know, like I don't do all this keto stuff. I'm going all gluten.
100%. You're adding extra gluten. Extra gluten. Yeah. Okay. What about like any type of side dishes?
Side dishes, man.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be like wild game per se, but you know, like for me, I'll just throw an example out there. When I cook my venison meatloaf, I have mashed potatoes and corn. Right. Yep. Mashed potatoes, corn, with homemade gravy from the juices of the meatloaf. And it's spectacular. And that's my go-to. That's one particular meal.
Yeah, man. Side dishes. So I had never tried this until yesterday, but my wife got these Factor pre-made meals. I mean, it's like the old school microwave dinners, but they're just more fancy. I ate it was filet mignon and then these mashed potatoes, and I kid you not, they are the best mashed potatoes I've ever had. And so I would just like microwave a couple of these pre-made meals and probably do a giant pile of these microwaved mashed potatoes. I don't know what it was about them. They were just so creamy and good. And I love mashed potatoes.
Right.
But they blew everything out of the water. My wife's like, mine suck. Anytime I do mashed potatoes, I'm just going to get these now. but I think that and creme brulee for dessert.
Okay.
I did homemade creme brulee, which I do not recommend. It takes forever. I thought it would be like, I told my wife, I'm like, hey babe, I wanted to surprise you. I'm making creme brulee tonight. I've got all the ingredients, and turns out it needs to like sit and cool to room temperature, and then you have to put it in the fridge basically overnight. And so we didn't even get to, like, she was so excited. And then she's like, did you look at the directions on this at all? Because I don't cook, man. I don't really do any of that stuff. But I was like, you know what? I know she would like if I did this. And then, yeah, we didn't get to eat it till the next day. But
this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Brulee is the thing that we always get anytime we go out to a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So, like, no backstrap, no, like, no, just like pure, perfectly cooked backstrap on this table.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Man, I feel like I eat backstrap so much. Like, there was a period of time, and I think I burnt myself out on a couple of things, and I still enjoy eating them, but I don't eat them often. Yeah. But I was going through this, like, workout program. I lost 47 pounds in, like, 4 months, and I was just eating healthy, and one of the things that I ate every night were either elk or venison backstraps. And so it was so much of it that I got burnt out on it. For lunch, I was eating a giant salmon fillet every single day. I typically love salmon. After I did that workout program and the diet program, I don't think I ate salmon for like 6 months. Yeah. I was like, man, I just can't do the same flavor over and over. And so had it not been for that, I would definitely have some type of fillet on there or a backstrap or tenderloin or something. But I think it's because of that being not that long ago that at this point, I'm like, I'd rather be a little bit more adventurous than just, you know, having a steak. Don't get me wrong. I'm a steak guy. I love them. But I can only do so much day after day. And it literally was. It was like, I think for 60 days straight, I ate the same exact thing for breakfast and then the same thing for lunch and then the same thing for dinner. And it wears you out pretty quick.
Yeah, I've done that. When I went on my big weight loss drop, this is no joke, I ate one chicken breast and a half cup of rice every meal, every day. And so in 16 weeks, I lost, 45. I went from 245 to 198.
Dang.
And so that was in 16 weeks. And my face was sunken in and like, I was just starving myself and working out basically is what I was doing.
Yeah.
All right. So I got to share a little bit of mine here. Like, I'm a street taco nut. Like, I absolutely love street tacos. Anytime I see a taco truck parked somewhere, like I get curious. I want to go check it out. I envision my death sentence meal being a fish fry type of deal where it is breaded and battered walleye with a mango salsa wrapped in a flour tortilla, right? And, dude,
That mango salsa is no joke.
Yeah. Like it's a mango salsa, what's that called? Coleslaw type of deal.
Oh, right?
It's like a mango salsa, a coleslaw over top of it. And, it is, I've made this a couple times. Absolutely bananas. Like I could sit there with a cold beer and just go and go and go and go and get drunk and get full. And dude, it's like my favorite. It is my favorite thing. But I also am a fajita guy. And so a while ago I cooked heart fajitas.
Ooh.
Deer heart fajitas. Oh my God, dude. See, people look at the heart and they get intimidated by it. And I'm telling you right now, do not get intimidated by the heart. It is delicious. The texture is just a little bit different, but if you do it right and you mix it with all this other stuff, like, again, like the peppers and all that stuff in the fajita seasoning, it turns out great. So those are two things on that. Recently on one of my daughter's turkey breasts, and you know how wild turkey breasts are. They're gigantic.
Yep.
Right. So we smoked one and then, we put it in the fridge and let it cool down. And then the next day we had deli sandwiches with it. And so it's wheat bread, smoked wild turkey. And by the way, like it is banana. It's ridiculously good with bread and butter pickles on it. And that's it.
Oh, dude, that's bread and butter pickles. I have thought about getting into canning my own pickles because I freaking love pickles. My wife, I kid you not, she buys like the pallets of pickles at Sam's Club. At one point, I think we had like 200 jars of pickles and she just loves it. I mean, we go through so many pickles on everything and my kids love them, but dude, bread and butter, man, there's no better pickle out there.
Yeah. My grandma used to make them from scratch from cucumbers out of her garden. And I have the recipe in the house somewhere. But when she passed, I asked my dad for it and I dug through her little recipe book and I got it, but it is ridiculously good. She did it like nobody else could do it. And, but I, before this thought goes away, when my wife goes shopping, she grabs, my wife is a condiment, a creamer, like sauce, pickles for every occasion, like sweet pickles, dill pickles, kosher pickles, pickles for Bloody Marys, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Olives, like all this stuff. So half, if not more, of our refrigerator is those things. And she's always like, oh, I can't fit anything. We got to get rid of some of this stuff. I'm like, you have 5 jars of pickles and 3 containers of creamer in the fridge. And I was just curious if your wife is like that as well.
They would get along great. My wife is the same way. She will have like 3 bottles of ranch, different brands, different flavors. And then she'll have, we'll go to eat dinner. And I don't really do ranch. I don't know why. I'm not a condiment guy. Like I'll do ketchup, mustard, mayo. And that's about it. I'm not a big sauce guy. But she will do ranch with everything. But the stuff she buys from the store is not good enough. So she makes her own homemade ranch. She'll be like, oh, yeah, can you get the ranch out? So I get it out. And she's like, no. Oh, I need to make some. And I'm like, we have ranch. Why do you buy this? Like, it's so much more time like that you're putting into making dinner by making your own ranch when you could just squeeze it out of the bottle. But she has like the Chick-fil-A sauce. She'll have In-N-Out sauce. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And it's for real. You look at our fridge, you open our fridge, the doors are completely full and then it's stacked up on the shelves. And then you actually look at like the substance in there and you're like, there's nothing to actually eat. I could make a cocktail out of sauces and that's it.
That's funny because my wife is like, I don't know why we don't have any food. I just went to the store. Yeah. And you came back with 8 jars of pickles.
Yep. Right.
And so that's always an area of contention in our household. It's like, okay, I actually have meat and stuff to put in the fridge so that we can and have protein and things like that, but there's no room for it. And so I got frustrated the other day and I did one of these where you just kind of swipe everything into the garbage that's in there. And if she wants it again, she'll go buy it. So
yeah. Yep. Does she like buy stuff without going through the pantry or going through the fridge. And then you have like extra of everything.
Yeah. So in our house, it gets pushed to the back of the refrigerator. And then instead of looking for it, they just open the door. Hey, we're out of this. Shut it. Yep. Go get it. And now there's, again, 8 jars of pickles in the fridge. So
we had, when we were traveling in the RV full time, we had limited space, you know, like we didn't really have a ton of room for anything. And at one point I opened the pantry door to the right of the fridge and we've got 7 jars of peanut butter. And I'm like, hey, babe, we do not need to buy any more peanut butter. She's like, what? Right. And she's like, I just got a new jar. And I was like, yeah, but we already had like 6 other ones. And she had like the all natural. She had almond butter. She had the peanut butter. She had like 3 different jars of just different peanut butter. And I'm like, this is getting ridiculous. And it was the same thing with chips. Like, because you have limited storage in there, the kids would have like their toys up in a cabinet. Well, she would take bags of like tortilla chips and stuff them up on top of the kids' toys just to get them out of the way. And then at one point we had like 4 bags of tortilla chips and I'm
half
like,
half eaten.
Yeah. Half eaten. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. From now on, like we're going to go through before we do grocery shopping. Cause I'm driving the RV. I'm pulling this giant machine. My truck is being pulled behind me with our bikes and all of our gear. And so I'm having to like pull into Walmart. Like it's a pain to go to Walmart when that's the vehicle you have. Yep. And so I'd be pulling in there and I'd let her out. She would run in. Me and the kids would go park and watch a movie or something. And she would come back out. And I'm like, not again. You didn't buy more pickles. You didn't buy more peanut butter, did you?
Anyway.
We're just trashing our wives' grocery trips right now.
But like, this is where guys often make a mistake, right? We have 2 choices. We can get back into what we were talking about, or we can go further down this rabbit hole. And then what'll happen is one of us will say something wrong and not know it. The episode is getting published. And then the one episode that I launch for the entire year, my wife listens to, she's like, why are you talking to me about groceries? All that stuff.
Exactly. So. The nice thing is I say most of this to my wife's face. Like it's all in good fun. And she does the same thing. She'll be like, what'd you buy at the gas station? Like I saw that there was a charge for gas, but then there was another like $55 charge. And I was like, oh, I loaded up on energy drinks. And she's like, are you kidding me? She hates that I drink them, but they're so good, man. And so, like, I've got a fridge out in the garage. And so, like, all the beer and the sodas and stuff. And we tell the UPS and FedEx people, like, hey, when you drop stuff off, feel free to grab a drink. But I've got, like, a whole shelf just for energy drinks. And she's like, you're going to die. Like, yeah, I'm going to tell your doctor you're doing this. I'm like, you're going to tell on me? Like, how old are we?
The only energy drinks that I do are the 5-hour energies. The only time I use them is when I am either driving out someplace or driving back someplace for a hunt. So yeah. I'll be driving like 8 hours. And usually what happens is on the last day of the hunt, I will get up early. I'll go do the morning hunt. If I don't see anything or get anything, it's back into the truck and I start heading east back home. So I'll slam a 5-hour energy and I'll just go until that runs out. And then I'll either get a hotel. But for me, most of the time, I don't even drink energy drinks. I am a coffee dude, like black, straight coffee, nothing else. And I usually have a cup in the afternoon, at some point, or now I have these little, I don't know, it comes in like a chewing tobacco type of tin.
Okay.
But they're straight caffeine pouches and some of them are flavored. So I'll throw a couple of like 1 or 2 of those in throughout the day and they're very low milligrams of caffeine, but it just keeps me from getting tired.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees because somewhere a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow, and he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, I don't... I'm not a coffee guy. I've literally never drank a full cup of coffee in my life. I've tried. I'm like, I just don't really like the flavor. Everyone's telling me it's an acquired taste. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't like it. So why would I drink something that I'm then going to get hooked on just so that I like it and have to pay a bunch of money for it? So I've just never really done that. But I'm the same way on big trips. Like, I'll go months without energy drinks. And then as soon as I have a road trip, it just kicks off the addiction again. And then I'm like buying them every day. And and that's why I'm back on them now. We've been renovating the house. And so it's like every day, you know, there was a 2 month stretch where I was putting in 16-hour days every day, just updating, painting, trim, everything. And so I was pounding, I think I was doing like three of the large monsters every single day.
Wow. I feel like that's not healthy.
Like, it's definitely not.
Coffee's okay. Like for me, like you can drink a lot of coffee and maybe get jittery, but like, I just feel like those Monster Energy drinks, don't they have like 100 milligrams of sugar in every one?
Dude, I've never looked, but I do know that it turns my pee radioactive green. So like when
that
I pee,
can't be good.
I'm pretty sure it would glow if I had the lights off. It's the weird, and it's instant. It's like, I'm not even a quarter of the way through a can. If I have to pee, I go in there and it's just like bright. And I'm like, this definitely is not. How much of that's just getting lodged in my kidneys and my liver
now? Oh, exactly. In a couple more years, you're going to have kidney stones and you're going to wonder why. You know, like, why do I have kidney failure? Oh, okay. Monster Energy. There you go. Okay. So I love this. I love that these are the conversations that we're having. But I have to go back to the death row meal for just a moment because I owe it to my mother and this wild game. Because actually, this Saturday is our annual wild game feed. So we're going to have a fish fry. We're going to have like venison. We're going to have like throughout the years, we've had turtle. We've had snake. We have frog. Frog legs, by the way, frog legs, if cooked right, are spectacular.
It's one of our biggest traditions here, like between me and my hunting buddies, is frog season. And every year. And I want to go down to Texas. I've seen some giant frogs in Texas. And to think about traveling to a different state to gig frogs.
Just to jig frogs?
Sounds as redneck as it gets. But I do love frog legs.
Oh, my God. Just imagine that. Like, you're sitting there. It's like, man. I can't go on this elk hunt this year. I already have plans. Oh, yeah. Where are you going? Yeah, I'm going to South Texas frogging. And your friends will look at you like, what are you talking about? You're going to hunt frogs in a different state?
Yeah.
That's funny. But anyway, my mom makes this layered dessert, and it's like brownies and chocolate pudding and whipped cream, and then mixed in with that is like Heath bar, up Heath bar. And I just call it Heath bar salad. And so I've threw my daughter's phone thinking that it was my daughter. I was texting my mom through my daughter's phone and basically just easing into the conversation of whether or not she's going to make this dessert for this event, this family event we're holding this weekend. And so, so she's like, is this Daniel? And she's like, and then I stopped texting. So I think she had an idea that it was me. She got an idea. Cause every time I see her, I ask her for this dessert, and sometimes she makes it, sometimes she doesn't, but dude, it's so good. It's pure sugar, but it is.
I love that you're trying to hide your tracks by using your daughter's phone, and she totally pinned you on it.
I know. That's what kids are for, right? Yeah. For a little bit.
They're scapegoats, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like every time a cookie goes missing in the house, or my wife will buy these cookies from like a fancy cookie store every once in a while. And then she'll buy like three or four of them. And here's what my wife does. She'll take a little piece off of it. She'll eat it. And then she'll go away for a little bit. She'll take a little piece off of it, go away for a little bit. And that one cookie will last her like a day and a half, 2 days, whatever. Those damn things are on the counter when I get home. just lard ass Johnson in the kitchen, just going bananas on all sweets. Like, I'm that guy who my wife says she's going to bake cookies, goes and buys the chocolate chips, but then doesn't bake them right away, and puts them in the baking cabinet. And I open up the chocolate chips, and now there's not enough chocolate chips for the recipe. And so she gets pissed at me for that. I'm that guy.
Yeah. Dude, I do the Toll House cookie dough.
Oh,
yeah. And I will just sit there and scoop it out. I'm like, I don't know if there's raw eggs in this. I don't know if it's supposed to be cooked or not, but I'm just sitting there scooping it out. And my wife, I mean, she kind of has a sweet tooth, definitely not like mine. I will eat anything if it's got sugar on it. It doesn't matter. Yep. But yeah, the sweet thing, she always tells me, she's like, you got to get on a diet. In fact, last week we were out shooting bows. Every Thursday night, I've got guys over for guys night. And we were shooting bows at the range, and my buddy rolls up on his e-bike, and he's got a bag of cookies. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. He's like, hey, my wife made these, or my mom made these, gave them to me to bring home. And my wife said, I'm too fat, and I need to bring those to guys night. And so then he proceeded. We sat down in the bourbon room, and we proceeded to sit there, and he had several of the cookies, but at least it was out of his wife's sight. So,
yeah. Well, then there's your wife like peeking through the blinds while you guys are shooting bows. Like, no.
No cookies.
Yeah, yep. Man. My wife will buy stuff for the kids, and no. This guy.
It's that dad tax, man.
Yeah,
you got to take the toll.
Sweets are definitely a big one for me. Like, I'll eat healthy, but I don't just nibble on sweets. It's like a whole meal of sweets for me.
Yeah.
And so I got to start. I'm surprised I don't have diabetes yet. So I got to slow down, because I feel like, okay, if anybody's going to get it, it's going to be me. And then they'll have to cut a leg off or something like that. And then there goes all my preference points for Wyoming elk.
I love that that's what you're worried about. You're like, I'm used to being down a digit. Like, I could lose a leg, but I don't want my preference points to be burned.
Yeah, exactly. I'd have to get an outfitter with, like, you see in some of those guys, like, they usually ride around in a wheelchair, but they got those basically tank wheelchairs. That
are with the tracks on them.
The tracks on them. There was a dude at one of the eight, I don't know if he was at an ATA show. I think it was the ATA show. He's there every year, but he's like an expert turkey caller. And I don't think he uses an actual call. This black dude, and he was on one of them one year. It was freaking gnarly. Like, that thing is going anywhere and everywhere you want it to.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm waiting to see an advertisement pop up on social media where you just back up to a tree, and then a hoist just takes the whole chair up, you know, like, it's coming, man. You know, it's going to happen.
Making hunting as literally easy as possible. You don't even have to walk to your tree stand.
Yeah.
You just drive a truck. The truck automatically drives away. You're in camo that is heated, and there's no elements. Like, you're perfectly comfortable. Like, you're on your phone, and you can shoot from your phone through an app, and it's just, oh my God, it's so rough. It's so rough.
You've just got a turret mounted to the fence post.
You know, we joke about that, but with how easy everything is getting, especially in our space, you know, I was talking to a guy the other day about long distance shooting. Right.
Yeah.
And what the ethical range for long distance shooting is. And he supported it. And I honestly don't care at what distance you shoot animals, as long as it's an ethical shot. And he used the term hit probability. Like, what do you think? Do you think with any weapon, a 50% hit probability is good?
Nah.
No. No, it's not. It's not at all. And so we were talking about that and, you know, basically how their product, they basically will set a rifle up for you and they'll send it to you. And the only thing you got to do is learn how to shoot it. Right.
Nice.
And so it kind of cuts back on the amount of time that you need to spend tinkering with your equipment. Someone else does it and then they send it to you. However, that and cell cams and taking like a guy, the barrier of entry to hunting these days is very low. Other than access, like there's compound bows are so easy to set up these days. Crossbows, rifles, they're so easy. Like there's not a ton of effort that needs to be put into them to get them accurate. You gotta you gotta practice, obviously, but cell cams, like live streaming, all of that stuff. It just like the stuff that we're bitching about today and complaining about or talking about in 10, 15 more years is it's going to be like, oh, I remember when cell cams first came out, just like how I talk about when trail cameras first came out.
I remember back when I actually had to adjust my dial on my scope in order to pull the trigger, you know, like they're going, oh no, mine just turns green and pulls the trigger for me.
Exactly.
You know, I feel like a lot of this stuff just, it's more convenient for sure, but it does not make people better hunters.
No.
You might have more success because of it, but I don't think you're a better hunter for it. Like my trail cameras, I don't think that those benefit me as far as actually killing deer. I view my trail cameras as something that I use just because I enjoy, in a sense, like the interaction with the deer all year long. I love looking at my trail cameras and it doesn't, I mean, I might get some intel of when a buck's moving here and there, but at the end of the day, I feel like it upsets me more to have trail cameras out, especially when I'm on Western trips and my target buck spends 3 days in front of my tree stand and I'm gone, but I'm like sitting on the side of the mountain, just getting notifications over and over. Like, you shouldn't have gone out west. You should have been in Missouri sitting in your tree right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from the shot to the animal, yes. But like, I guess a small part of me has to disagree just a little bit because, man, I really think that these cell cams and what they're capable of, and if you, and I'm saying if you live on the property or you're in the area, let's say you're at your truck and you have three trail cameras in a row. I'm just thinking about the property, one of the properties that I can hunt. If he's on this one and then he's on this one, I know for a fact he's going to be on the third one. And so I just got to hop in there at some point, probably to an already preset tree stand. And my odds of putting an arrow or a bullet through that deer have gone up because of that. And so, man, you're right. It doesn't make you a better hunter per se, but it definitely could assist you in being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I think, I mean, when I say it doesn't make me a better hunter, I think like long-term, say all of this went away.
Yeah.
Did those trail cameras make me better at what I'm doing if we can no longer have them?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I feel like it helped me out for that season. Like I knew a certain buck's pattern and maybe that translates to the next generation of deer working your property and you're like, hey, because of these trail cameras, now I know that this is a serious travel corridor. But when I look at it, I've screwed myself over because of trail cameras where it's like in my gut, I know I need to sit here, but because I got a picture of a deer on a trail camera over on this side of the property, I decided to sit here. Yeah. And I feel like it just adds so much to like the mental space of, do I do what the trail camera is telling me or do I do what I feel like is right? Or do I go with my instincts? You know, because I've gone out there, I was out there a couple of years ago. I had like 13 bucks out in the beans and some really, really nice deer. And I went out there, rode my e-bike, threw up my spotting scope, was watching these deer. And one of my trail cameras picked up one picture of the deer. You know, they were out feeding in the field, but it's like being in the field, boots on the ground with your optics. I got so much more information than having eight trail cameras on that property because only one of them got a couple pictures.
Yeah.
So I feel like nothing is ever going to replace being there. Like as much as you want it to, like you've got an angle that the trail camera shoots and then it's like, okay, is the deer running? Because he might run right past your trail camera, get to a spot where he's going to feed or bed and stop, but you just get a blur coming across. And so don't get me wrong. I will forever run trail cameras. I'll probably forever use them to determine where I'm going to go and sit. But every now and then I just look at it and I'm like, is this making me a better hunter or is it just, you know, it's giving me more intel for sure. Yeah. But I think when I think of becoming a better hunter, I think, okay, if that one tool goes away, am I still going to be able to succeed because of like having had that in the past?
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Yeah. And I think for me, I started hunting in the era where, yes, they had trail cameras, but they weren't, there wasn't a lot of them out there. And so I had to learn woodsmanship to get to where I'm at. But once I learned woodsmanship and then I started using trail cameras, bingo. Like,
yeah,
I mean, there's no substitute for woodsmanship. But if you use woodsmanship along with all this technology, it definitely increases your chances, I feel.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I feel like the best use for a trail camera is to partner it with a suspicion that you already have based on looking at topo maps, being on the ground, looking at trails, looking at, you know, fence crossings or funnels. And then you go, okay, my suspicion is that there's probably a bachelor group of bucks using this area, and there's probably going to be a giant that comes through at some point. I'm throwing up a trail camera. Let's see if that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah. I want to kind of take a quick turn here. And I was just like, I was just scrolling through Boone and Crockett type content, and basically just to see like where are all these big deer coming from. Okay. And you've lived in Wisconsin, right?
Yep.
And so the state of Wisconsin has a couple things that, I mean, they have a rifle season during the rut, correct?
Yep.
Yep. And so when does rifle season start in Wisconsin?
So it's typically like tail end of the rut, depending. Honestly, I've seen over the past years from like moving to Missouri and now still going back for rifle season, I've seen it like there's years where it's just hot. Like it, you can't sit without seeing 40 deer. And then there's years where it's just dead. And I don't know if it's necessarily that the rut is changing, but some years we have, you know, a wet fall and the farmers can't get their corn out because like the cornfields are so muddy. And so anyways, the rifle season in Wisconsin goes from the Saturday before Thanksgiving until the Sunday after every single year. And so, you know, obviously that shifts a little bit depending on what Thursday, or, you know, it could have like a 4 or 5 day fluctuation as far as dates go. But the rifle season up there, dude, it is so wild, man. I was just talking to a guy about it yesterday. When you pull the trigger in the woods, you need to be ready for deer to literally run straight at you. And I don't know if it's because of the echoing and the deer just like, oh, what was that? But like, well over a half a dozen times, probably over a dozen times, I have been out there, shot a deer, and within minutes had deer right in front of me, like standing over a dead deer that I just killed. Yeah. And it seems to happen every year, but yeah, it's a land of giants for sure.
And that's what I wanted to talk with you about. Not only, so like there's two different eras. There's like, all of the, basically what I did was I looked at the Boone and Crockett, what states have the most entries of all time and on average every year. And Wisconsin is number one, period. Yeah. Wisconsin is over Iowa. It's over Illinois. It's over Kansas. It's over Missouri. And it's been that way for, I mean, as long as Boone and Crockett deer were recorded.
Yep.
Okay. And so having lived there before, what is your take on why Wisconsin grows big deer, even with, like, some people say Michigan, Pennsylvania, oh, you got to get the rifle season out of the rut. You got to get the rifle season out of the rut. But it seems to me that big giant deer are still getting killed every year in Wisconsin, even though there's a rifle season during the rut.
I've kind of racked my brain trying to figure this out, because part of me thinks like you get like world-class deer every year being taken. And sure, you have the random guy that shoots one, but I feel like as a whole, it's people like big buck killers kill big bucks like year after year. Yeah. And there's so much pressure in Wisconsin. Part of me thinks like there's a select group of people that have really figured out how to hunt pressured deer. And there's, you know, 600,000 hunters or however many there are during the 9-day rifle season. I feel like the deer almost become comfortable throughout the year until, you know, the week leading up to that. And then they know it's become an instinct, just like everything else has over years and years, that it's like, hey, this is when we disappear. You might get flushed out and, you know, a giant buck gets shot. But I feel like bucks just, you can almost pattern their spookiness, if that makes sense. Like, I know that this deer is going to disappear and he's probably going to be in the bottom of that swamp. Yeah. Like, he's going to be way down there and he's going to be in the thickest, nastiest stuff. He still needs to eat. He still needs to drink. And there's going to be hot does. Like, a hot doe is going to walk the edge of that cattail marsh and he might pop out. And so I feel like we kill so many big deer because it's, as a whole, we're just good at, like, the land itself is good at growing deer. And I don't know what the reason is, like, on the east side of the Mississippi versus the west, because you look at Buffalo County and it sits right against the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. You go to the Minnesota County directly across from it, their numbers aren't even close to the same. And I'm thinking, like, the soil can't be that much different, right? Like, the topography looks pretty similar. So I've racked my brain. Like I said, I've got these theories that I've come up with, but at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get why, especially that central Wisconsin right along the Mississippi, and you look at the counties and Buffalo County's leading always. Like, Buffalo County has more entries than some states do on a given year. Yeah. And then, like, we're seeing, I feel like we've seen in the past couple of years, a trend shifting even farther east into like Trempealeau County where I hunt. There's more monster bucks getting killed in Trempealeau County. In fact, I think it was number 2 on the list last year and it used to not make the top 5. Damn. And for whatever reason, like that little strip right there, kind of at the bend of the Mississippi River on the east side is just a killer spot. But then, you know, the northern half of Wisconsin, you're not seeing that. Like, it's big woods, but there's just so much ag and it's generational agriculture there. And the soil is just rich and perfect for growing anything. And so I'm thinking maybe there's minerals coming up out of the ground and it's in the water also, you know, not just in the food that they're eating. But yeah, I mean, I hate to say there's something in the water and that's why we have big bucks, but I just don't know. And I don't know that anybody has a great explanation for the giant gap in between first and second.
Yeah. And it's crazy. So you look at, and I'm not sure here by county. Okay. Now you'll look at some of the states like Iowa. Okay. Iowa. And I'm looking at a map right now. This is an old map, but it is, it's an old map of the Pope and Young and Boone and Crockett map. Right, of where all these entries are coming from. And Wisconsin has more, like, red is the highest. Wisconsin has more red Boone and Crockett entries and Pope and Young entries. County-wise, there's more counties in Wisconsin that have these entries than do not have these entries.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So, and then you look at, like, Iowa. Iowa has 99 counties, and we have 99 counties, and there's... We have 9 counties that are producing a majority of the Boone and Crockett entries for the entire state of Iowa, right? Mm. And so you look at that and you go, okay, well, geographically, Iowa to the north is all ag, like very little rolling hills and fingers. I mean, it's farmed fence to fence pretty much.
Yeah.
Northeast Iowa has that western Iowa or western Wisconsin vibe to it. That is why big deer get shot out of northeastern Iowa every single year. And then you have pasture farm ground south of Interstate 80, where three or four or five counties have all of the luck. And then the further west you get. Now, there's big deer everywhere, and this is based off of just entries. Like, how many deer, let me ask you this question, how many deer over, like, over 130 have you registered with Pope and Young or Boone and Crockett?
So I haven't registered anything that I've killed. Yeah. I've got probably three or four over that mark. And, you know, I grew up, I feel like I could have done a lot better as far as like those numbers go, but it was really late in life. In fact, not until like college or shortly after that I started thinking about big bucks. It was like, man, if I get excited about it, great. Like any 8-point was a good buck for me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I enjoyed. Now I'm kind of shifting and going like, hey man, I want like a really good representation of what's on the property or what's using the property. But as far as like the amount of people that I know that have killed giants, it's insane.
Yeah.
And to the idea of like, why are there so many big bucks? You mentioned like the northeast corner of Iowa looking more like Wisconsin. Wisconsin, from once you say you cut it into thirds, like the top third, you're talking like big woods, like north woods, a lot of pines, a lot of evergreens. And then the whole lower two thirds of the state is almost identical all the way across. You might get bluffs and stuff along the river, but as a whole, you have a ton of cover. Like every county in Wisconsin has a ton of cover in it, and you have a ton of ag. And I feel like some of these other states that would be able to produce just as many, it's like you said, they're farmed fence to fence. The deer still need that cover. They need that cover not only, you know, during the rut or during the hunting pressure, but they need it year round. And, you know, a cornfield looks a whole lot different. It provides everything they need when there's corn and not nearly as much when it's cut. So it's like, what's a deer going to do with ground that doesn't have cover up to its ankles?
Yeah.
It's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But with those, I feel like one other thing to look at is what is the Boone and Crockett entry per, like, what does that look like compared to total harvest? Because I think the Wisconsin just harvests a ton of deer, period. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like there's other states that probably have a higher percentage of Boone and Crockett entries over total harvest.
Yeah, that's a great, I'm going to look into that. I'm going to look into that after this episode and try to get some numbers and share those. Cause you know, how many deer do you think get harvested every single year in Wisconsin? We'll look that up real quick.
Dude, I bet it's a million. 800,000 plus maybe.
How many deer get killed in Wisconsin each year? Hunters registered. Oh, now this is just the 9-day gun season. Over the 9-day gun season, including 85,390 bucks and 85,000 bucks and 88,000 antlerless deer, according to DNR figures. So that equivalents to 174,000 deer in the 9-day gun season.
Dang. And so I was way off. But
yeah,
it's like 100, like you got to think about that, almost 200,000 deer.
Yeah, in 9 days.
Versus what were the numbers you were looking at as far as Wisconsin producing Pope and Young or Boone and Crockett bucks?
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Yeah, so I don't have that.
Oh, okay.
I don't have that information right now, but it would be easy to find.
Yeah.
Total, maybe if I add how many total deer were killed in Wisconsin in 2023. Let's see. Yeah, so it's just giving me firearm Here we go. All it's doing is bringing me to like this 9-day gun season. In the 9-day gun season in Wisconsin, you have to report your deer kills too, right?
So you have to telecheck them, and there's, I mean, you have to take that into account also, what percentage of the population isn't even registering deer.
Yeah.
But it used to be that you had to take it in right away. Like you had a hard tag that you had to have on the deer, and then, you take it into a registration point. Every gas station had it, most grocery stores, but then they went to the telecheck deal. So now it's all on the phone. And I'm like, I guarantee the amount of people that didn't register doubled when they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an interesting fact about Wisconsin that in 2023, let's see, the number of licenses that include deer hunting privileges, gun, bow, crossbow, sports and conservation patron licenses. I'm not sure. I'm guessing that's like the habitat related stuff. 697 licenses were issued across the entire state. That's a lot. And that's not even like, I'm guessing New York has more, Pennsylvania has more, Michigan has more. Like that's a ton of people going out and hunting every single year.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't drive. I joke with people all the time. They don't believe me until they get up there, because like here in Missouri, you might hear a couple of gunshots opening weekend, but you know, not a whole lot. In Wisconsin, you can't drive down the highway without looking out, and every chunk of timber, every field edge, you see either a blind or you see blaze orange from somebody sitting on a bucket, sitting in a tree stand, walking the edge of a field. And it's a war zone. I kid you not. It's one of my it's probably my favorite activity, or specific event of the year is going up there for rifle, because you sit down and the woods erupt. I mean, it sounds like it would sound like you're in Tel Aviv, Israel right now. You know what I mean? Like you sit down and you hear this and you're like, holy cow, dude, somebody just shot a deer. Somebody shot a deer. Somebody shot a deer. And then you hear like those rapid successions of fire. Boom, 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 boom. I'm like, that person probably just missed the deer a bunch of times, but it's like the amount of pressure, and the deer just get used to it. I feel like the young deer get weeded out pretty quickly, but then the old bucks, I can't tell you how many just glimpses of big mature deer I've caught cruising the thickest bottom at the edge of like a cattail swamp or a creek bed. And it's like, you know, they just got bumped from somebody. That person probably never saw them.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't even see him, but I heard him, and it was only one deer. So I'm assuming it's a big buck. And it's just wild to me. In fact, this last year we had, what was it? 4 bucks that were shot within 150 yards of each other on a 40-acre property. And that happened over 5 days of the hunt. And it's just a different hunt. Like nobody, I know there's other places that have a great tradition around rifle season, but like I've never been any place that compares to central Wisconsin on opening day.
Yeah. From an analytics standpoint, do you think there are pockets coming from every county where it's like a neighborhood of highly pressure or highly managed group of guys that maybe they have a cumulative 10,000 acre area or like 5,000 acres or whatever the case is, but it's just like a small group of people killing the same amount of deer every year? Or do you think it's just equally as good for everybody across the entire state to potentially run into a book caliber animal?
That's a really tough question. I think there's people who definitely have a higher success rate with killing big bucks, but I think you could go to almost any county in the country, and if you hunt there for 5 or 10 years, like you could just have a random 170 inch deer walk in front of you.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've heard stories of it. The other weird thing about Wisconsin, it's not large chunks of land that are managed by one person. I mean, it's very rare to find, 500 acre plus farms. Yeah. Most of them are 40, 80, maybe 200. But like the property that I grew up hunting on. Like, we have a 40-acre chunk. It's almost all hardwoods with a tiny little strip of like marsh right against the road. Mm-hmm. And the guy whose property we hunt, he owns another 160, I believe, just, I mean, like 2 miles away, but we've kind of left that to him and some other people that he allows to hunt there. And in between, we've got three other properties, you know, that are owned by different people that have different views on hunting. Some of them don't allow hunting at all. Some of them are like super diehard. This is what we're shooting and this is the only thing we're shooting. But I am seeing more and more that people are getting out and they are like kind of forming bonds with neighbors. Like, we've talked to neighbors of that hunting property over the past 3 to 5 years that we had never communicated with, unless it was, hey, can we go pull the deer off your property? Like, we shot it, it hopped the fence, and we just have to recover it. But now, like, sharing trail camera pictures. Hey, look, have you guys been getting this buck? We've also been getting this buck. Which ones are you guys planning on taking? We want to get on a neighborhood management plan, because part of me is like, I would love it if everybody had the same criteria for deer that they were shooting. But at the same time, it's really easy to use it's brown, it's down neighbors to improve your hunting success. Like, those guys that go out there and just blow up the woods in the morning, on opening morning, they shoot everything that moves. Those deer are coming to you if you're not doing that on your property. And so it's half a dozen, you know. Like, I like the fact that people are getting more into age class and shooting mature bucks. But at the same time, I'm curious to see how that's going to affect our hunting, if we're still going to see the quantity of deer, or if, because they're not in there shooting the woods up, if the deer just stay put.
Yeah, that's a question. That's a crazy question. I've mentioned this before. I feel like single hunters are taking up more acreage per hunter now than they ever have in the past. And it's because of big antlers, right? People are trying to lease or buy or get permission, sole permission for a group of like a piece of property so that they have a better hunting experience. Meanwhile, other people are at some point are getting pushed out in one direction. Like, and usually it's the permission type guy here in Iowa. It's the permission type guy. Yeah. And unfortunately, we don't have a ton of public in Iowa. And so therefore someone's leaving somewhere. And so, like, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but like non-residents coming in and buying land in Iowa, they're playing their part. You know, the locals getting pushed out. Where do we go? Public is overrun. But I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. But it just kind of going back to the original conversation is that it blows my mind that Wisconsin has such a steep tradition in its rifle season and it's being in the rut and all those things that you've said, and yet it still produces the largest whitetails every single year, bar none, in the entire country. And so I would love, now that we start talking about it, I would love to talk with a wildlife biologist out of Wisconsin and just kind of break that state down and just be like, hey, listen, what's the story with Wisconsin? Why are there many big deer?
And with CWD really becoming prevalent in Wisconsin and just spreading like wildfire, that was a fear that everybody had. Like, all of our big bucks are going to go away. We're not going to have this mature population. And as far as I know, we haven't seen a serious dip in the amount of big bucks that are killed. And I mean, they were doing like mass
extinction
exterminations like in counties where it's like, dude, listen, it's no regulations. We just have to weed these things out. And they bounce back so fast.
Oh yeah.
And so I really don't. I would love to have an answer for that. Maybe after our last meal and we get executed, that's the first question we ask. What was it about Wisconsin? Yeah.
Dear Lord, thank you for taking time to visit me today, but you got to talk to me about Wisconsin, and you got to talk to me about how big bucks get their antlers and things like that. So
I'd like to see somebody make, like, you know how there's maps that people make and how things change over the course of time. I would love to see that in Wisconsin including each individual county, of like it changing colors with how many Boone and Crockett deer get killed, and see what it looks like when CWD hit. Also, right. When there was a big boom in people coming. I know people are buying up land in Buffalo County like crazy. I mean, professional athletes. I know a guy there. Actually, I don't know. Did you go up there and meet with Tom Ingevall?
No, I didn't go up there. But I remember. Yeah,
we met together, but that was to potentially lease that property. So down the street, Tom Ingevall with Bluff Country Outfitters. Mm-hmm. Super awesome dude. He has been leasing land from several different farmers for years, and he produces giant deer every year.
Yeah.
He's losing his leases to big name people that are coming in and buying up those properties, like just giving offers that nobody's going to refuse. It's, I mean, it's a worry for sure. Like nobody wants to see that happen, but when the word gets out about giant deer, like people are just picking up land left and right.
Yep. Yep. That's a fact. And it makes me want to take my money out of, cause Iowa property in Iowa is ridiculous. It sounds like Wisconsin's getting up there, but like in Nebraska, in Kansas, it's well below that. And it's almost like, I feel I want to go, if I was to make a gigantic investment in land, I would love to have property in Iowa, but if I could get somewhere close to the same caliber of deer, but pay the same price and get more ground, that's intriguing to me. And it's especially in a state where non-residents can hunt every year. Why not? Right? Like, I don't know, man. It just seems.
I'm under the impression that, this is my plan for purchasing property. I want to find those states where it's big ag, and I want to go buy the unusable land for agriculture.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, listen, this is a marsh bottom, but you don't have cover for a mile in every direction once the crops are down, which means this tall grass, these three trees that you have on a 500-yard stretch, every one of those trees will produce a big buck this year because that's where the deer have to be. They have to be in those single little timber covers or those creek bottoms where it's the only cover around unless they're moving counties in order to find that. And so I just feel like I don't need a giant chunk of ground. I don't need to be doing food plots. Like the farmers in those big states are doing that for me. But if I could find a little strip in South Dakota and it's the only tree line around, like no farmer wants that. He has no use for it. What would you sell me this 20 acres, you know, just that borders your property for that you don't use for anything?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to find them. Got to find those spots. That's the only thing, right? And the only way to find them is to go out there and maybe hunt and then look at these pockets. Because I've found those pockets out in South Dakota and Nebraska before where I'm sitting on a knob. There's cattle all around me. And yet there's this little area, and it's usually private, that is holding all the deer, and it's just a nothing. It's just it's just scrub thorn bushes, and it's basically grown up cattle pasture that the cattle don't even use anymore because it's so thorny and nasty in there. But that's where they live, right? And so, yeah. Well, it sounds like we got some work to do as far as research and looking for out-of-state ground to buy.
Dude. So I know we did that one trip looking at a property to lease, but it's funny because I say I want to buy property and we're in the process of selling property right now. Yeah. And it's just wild to me how these tiny chunks produce. Like, I'm really surprised that nobody's picked up my property. Like, no serious hunter has picked it up because I posted the trail camera pictures on it from last year.
Yeah.
And I've got a handful of deer over 140 on that property, and it's 25 acres. And some of these deer hang out there every single day. So,
well, if you live in Missouri and you're looking for property, how many acres is it?
25.
25 acres, 25 acre property. Hit up Dan. He'll point you in the direction of some Pope and Young bucks.
Yeah, dude, hit me up right after this deer season.
And then there ain't going to be any 140 classes left. So, all right, man. Well, hey, listen, I appreciate you taking last minute time to come and do this podcast with me. And now after this conversation, I'm hungry. And for some reason, I'm eager to e-scout after this conversation. So Dan, thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. And if you haven't listened to the Nomadic Outdoorsman yet, Dan does a really good job. That podcast is on the Sportsman's Empire as well. So go check that out. Dan, thank you.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.